And when Dobby dies, it is the worst part of the whole thing. But it's just
I agree with you 100%.
But it's so beautifully shot. It's the sand and the water and the pietà scene. And I tell the kids every time somebody dies in somebody's lap, I say, look, a pietà scene. And finally, the kids are catching on. Because when I was in film school, like I've made a couple movies. And I always try to put a pietà scene in, but it only made sense in one of my movies, so I have one.
And wait, what is it?
In a world where you only have trailers and posters to judge a movie, Jim and Ted strike out to answer the age-old question, will you see it?
Hey, Ted, it's a little bit of a short week, episode 131. Welcome to Thursday. Not that Thursday, this Thursday. I don't even know what that means.
It's not the day that it's a day that we dropped, but it's also the day we're recording next week's episode.
That's right.
And it's also the day that the first football day of the week, you know?
Nowadays, yeah.
Now it's
I mean, pretty soon football is going to be like a weekly, not weekly, it's going to be like a daily occurrence every week. Man, I don't see this guy for like 5-6 weeks. Now it's like twice in a week. I don't know what to do. All right, let's get to some beer. I heard you went to Whole Paycheck to get some beer
today.
That's
right. I went to Whole Paycheck.
What'd you get?
Whole Foods. I got some Modern Times. I didn't go too crazy. I was looking at some of their $20 beers and I'm like, ah.
Really? They have that much?
They have a couple. They have like three or four of the, you know, the cork topped with a little cage on it, you know.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But I just went with a Modern Times, Virtual Future.
Virtual Future. There you go.
We're talking a lot about virtual stuff.
Yeah.
So it's a West Coast IPA.
Cool.
But we're back in the West Coast. We better get back into the West Coast IPA.
It's like the Beatles. Back in the West Coast. All right, while you're opening and pouring,
tell me.
I don't know if I've ever had this on the show before,
good.
But I've had it.
Okay.
Simple, everyday Anchor Steam.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, just a good, solid, you know, 12-ouncer. I think it's only like, I think it's like a 4.9. I call anything under 7 beer juice.
Yeah. We're clearly in midweek. Midweek.
Yeah, night. I got to work in the morning, man. The last thing I need is like a 10% or like right before bed or something.
Me too. Me too. I was actually thinking about only drinking half of this thing because it's like a.
How do you drink half?
I don't know. It's a 19.2-ouncer.
Oh, I thought you were going to say percent.
Oh, my God. Then I definitely
imagine
drink
a 19.2-ouncer. I'd just finish it.
Yeah, you're right.
We got all night. You've had Anchor Steam before. I mean, it's a steam beer, which means that they have a lager yeast that they treat similar to an ale yeast.
Ah.
So lager yeast ferment in colder temperatures. Ales ferment in warmer temperatures. So I think lagers, off the top of my head, will ferment about 38-ish degrees, whereas ales ferment like upper 60s, low 70 degrees. And what they do with this one, they do it like in the upper 50s, low 60s.
So do you think it stresses the yeast out and the yeast is like, oh my God, I can't handle this?
Oh, no, not at all. It's the opposite.
It mellows it out.
Yeast love warm temps.
Oh, okay.
The warmer, the better. But what happens is when yeasts are in warm, like you want to essentially ferment beer at the lowest temperature possible to where you don't stall the fermentation.
Okay.
The warmer it gets, then they start putting off like all these other off flavors and stuff. You know what I mean? They start like...
You want to control it. You want to have it very controlled.
If you can, yeah. So essentially when you have an ale yeast, let's say you're doing it 80 degrees. Oh yeah, the yeast is going to love you for that, but the beer is not going to taste very good.
Right.
And when you do the same thing to the lager yeast, you raise the temp. The yeast like it because they go crazy. It just changes some of the flavor, and that's where you get this Anchor Steam sort of a flavor is from that lager yeast warmer. So just a brief history of it. Way back when during the gold rush and everything, there was a wild yeast strain that they found. And they didn't have refrigeration and all this stuff. So they
Whoa,
were just like
wild yeast.
Yeah. They were just brewing beer with this wild yeast strain with like non-refrigeration and just doing what they could do with it. And it made the steam beer. And it was considered at the time like low class beer.
Uh-huh. Blue collar.
Yeah, exactly. Working man, you know, like, we got some of that steam beer. This, you know, it's like, yeah. You know, we don't want that, you know. We want the yellow fizz from Milwaukee. You know,
it's so funny that you said that, because whenever I see Ankerstein, steam with an M, right?
Steam, like as in a steam room.
Like steam room. Yeah. Whenever I see Ankerstein, I always think of Monterey. And yeah. Monterey is exactly that. Monterey is like upscale now.
Totally.
But back in the day,
it was Cannery Row.
It was blue collar as blue collar could be, you know, stunk to high heaven. Yeah.
Yeah. Bring in the fish. Can everything. Who is the guy's Steinbeck?
That's right.
Yeah, Steinbeck.
He wrote that the expose, right? On the horrors of the Cannery Row.
Yeah, like Upton Sinclair and the meatpacking industry in Chicago. Yeah. All right. What's your beer doing? What do you like about it?
It's an IPA, so can't go wrong with an IPA.
Yeah, solid all the time.
It's fruitier than I expected from modern times. Expected more of a hoppiness.
Okay.
But yeah, no, solid. I can't really place it. Not memorable, but yet a solid IPA. Does that make sense? I don't even know. How's yours? I mean, you know.
Oh, I mean, it's an Ankerstein. I mean, it has that lager flavor, but with like a ale twist to it.
Now that I know that, when we go back to Monterey, because I feel like we'll probably
Could go to Ralph's and probably find it.
I only drink it in Monterey, okay? Okay. I only drink it with like oysters and Ankerstein.
All right, that's it. I'm getting oysters and Ankerstein. We're going to Frank's and shucking oysters and drinking Ankerstein then, just because that's what you said. All right. So, how's your week this week?
Yeah, I mean, you know, work week, struggling with the school and the kids and them right next to me.
That joke, or not joke, but that comic that Ann sent, that's like too on the nose.
It's so painful.
I couldn't even like find humor in it, because I was just every like step of the day that she had, I was just like, oh God, I'm living this thing. It's like a nightmare.
Every step of the progression of this hero, you know, not all heroes wear capes, and you know, the parents and the teachers are doing God's work.
Oh man, and the way she put it, when you get to the point where you think you have everything like nailed down, mm-hmm. and I mean every day it's like a scavenger hunt trying to figure out where the links are and stuff.
Yeah.
It's like, no, where is it now? It was just here yesterday.
Oh my God. So my IT-ness, you know, was in full effect. What was this, today or yesterday? The days all meld together, you know? And the teacher, so one of his slides, he had like 8 slides to do, and he had done 7 of them. And we're like, where's your 8th slide? And he goes, there's no 8th slide. So he had done the work on majority of these slides. And he's like, that's fine. I'll just text my teacher. And he left a voicemail for his teacher, the teacher in the chat stream, right? The teacher wrote a voicemail back, and she's like, I'll replace the 8th slide. So, but she didn't do it. She just restored it to the original, which like blew out all his work. You know? Oh, God. And he's losing his mind over here. And I'm just like, all right, this is Google. You know what I mean? At work, we have version control. You know, you can hop in here and get some versions. I like, move over. So he moved over. I got in there. I found the versions. I backed it up to a couple of versions. And then Ann's like, well, you're going to lose the new slide. I was like, that's fine. I'll do it as a copy, you know, I'll save it as a copy. So I saved it as a copy. I said,
sure.
Do not use all over this thing. And then.
Because that was the copy or whatever?
Because it was the one that didn't have any of the information on it. So I said, this will be the basis, because it's do not use, because it's the last thing that she put on there.
Right.
The only thing we need to do is take the one slide off and put it into the work that he had done to the previous version. So yeah, so we finally got it all together, and we, you know, I made sure I proofed his work so it showed all the stuff. And then you click turn in, you know, and he'd click turn in. But it had both of them attached. It had both the ones that said do not use and the other one. So the teacher wrote back. She goes, it looks like you're still missing some stuff. And you know what I mean? So I was like, you looked at the one that said do not use. So we'll get it all straightened out tomorrow. Fridays have been quite the day. Do you guys have a different day on Friday for the kids? It's like a catch-up day.
So what they do is they go Monday and Tuesday is a school day, standard school, 8 to 2:30, let's say. Wednesday's like a half day. They're done at 10:30. And then Thursday, Friday, it's kind of back to regular school. And the reason they do that is they give the teachers a chance for catch up. And it allows for teachers who are working on campus or things that are going on campus. It's everybody's there 2 days. The custodians come in deep clean the rest of the day Wednesday. Teachers get a chance to do all their kind of catch up work, as do the kids.
Oh, okay.
And then Thursday, Friday are kind of regular school days as well. So they break it up in the middle of the week to kind of catch up on COVID stuff and also catch up on website collaboration, load up, whatever they do and stuff,
Yeah. I mean, I'm a big fan of that schedule. I think it's the way to do it. And I think if we ever go back to the office, that would be my choice of how to go back to the office. 2 days, then a work from home day Wednesday, and then 2 days.
Yeah, and people can come in and deep clean the office and stuff and get everything back right exactly.
So how about you? How was your week? Did you do anything fun?
Week was good, yeah. I bottled some beer, so I did a batch, and I think it was while you guys were on your trip. So I had this Scotch ale, and it's the one I made in the past. But while I was getting all the stuff out of the fridge, so I have the grain, and then I have yeast, and I have, the hops and stuff, and some of it needs to be refrigerated, the hops. And I'm getting everything out of the fridge, and I come across all these hops. what are these hops from? So I'm thinking to myself, what recipe did I not use these hops?
Uh-oh.
So, that beer's already been had, so it's all gone.
Not this current one.
No. I just had 2 ounces of Columbus hops.
Is that a lot or a little? I'm very sorry if you're not.
It's a lot because Columbus has a high alpha acid.
Okay.
So, and 2 ounces of it is a lot. So alpha acid's what leads to the bitterness and everything. So I'm like, well, the Scotch ale, I think, was supposed to have a 20 IBU or something. By the time I was finished, it had a 95 IBU. So I thought, I blended all the hops that it was supposed to have, plus these extra 2 ounces I found. I broke them into 6 different distributions for the hop schedule. So every 10 minutes. So I put in one and that started the boil. Then at 50 minutes, I put the next 40 minutes and so on all the way to zero just to see what would happen,
Yeah.
And so anyway, I bottled the beer and flat, warm and young just out of the carboy from fermenting. It is awesome. I can't wait to have it. And I bottled it about 2 weeks ago.
Uh-huh.
So that wasn't this past week, but about 2 weeks ago. So 2 weeks in the bottle, I'm going to crack one for me and Frank tomorrow to see how it is.
Sweet.
And I'll send one home to you.
Nice.
So you could have it on the show or whatever. And yeah, it was just the flat warm. That's the only taste I had. So we'll see how it turns out. It should be ready to go.
So you taste it while you're bottling it. You give a little taste to just see if the flavors are getting there.
Well, yeah. What I do essentially is I'm bottling, and I didn't keg this when I bottled it because I wanted to age it a little bit. But what you do is, you kind of go through boom, 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 boom. You got to put sugar in it and stuff. But before I do any of the sugar, before I do any, the corn sugar. Before I do any of that, I go through boom, 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 you want to get all your bottles going. And then I put cask yeast in the bottles because a lot of my yeast drops out for some reason. I don't know why. That means there's no yeast left to carbonate. But what I do, though, is I take just a little bit and I put it in a tall tube.
Yeah.
And that's where I drop in the hydrometer to see what my
gravity.
Final gravity is.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to put any sugar in that's not yet fermented, because then, it might throw off my numbers, whatever. So I see what that is. And just for the sake of cleanliness, and I don't want to add contamination and everything.
Yeah, you're not going to put that back.
Right. So I always drink that. And that's like my first foray into, is this beer going to be good or not? And then, you know, I drink that then while I'm doing it. It's usually equivalent to probably like 8 ounce beer or something.
Okay.
Yeah. So you get like a good amount. I've actually, you know, depending on how much alcohol, that little bit that I taste. Oh, yeah. Sometimes I get so buzzed off of that. Otherwise, short week, not much to report other than the school woes and all that.
Right, right. Which everybody in the world is experiencing.
Oh, when you see that comic, you're just like,
yeah,
it's exactly,
it's
like
global.
That. Oh, yeah.
And then even to think that some of these teachers also have kids that are in school, you know what I mean? They have to both be the teacher and then their kids still. Oh, so I had the most COVID experience.
Oh, do tell.
We had the president of you know the channels and whatever, the whole cable networks group. So after the Fox merger,
and that doesn't include Disney Plus. That's just
not Disney. Well, no, not Disney. He doesn't. Disney Plus doesn't fall under him. But he's a very big Fox executive.
Oh, a Fox executive. Okay.
Fox executive that came over. I think he reports directly to Bob. So he's like one step away from Bob, or if not, I think he is one step away from Bob.
Wow.
But Bob definitely knows his name.
Right.
So he's giving a speaker series to us. You know, there's like 490 people like watching his Zoom, you know, and there's a moderator and the guy's moderating. And halfway through this awesome lecture on diversity and inclusion, he's British, so he's like, hold on one minute.
British.
And his wife walked into the room and she's off camera, but he's like, hold on, I have to speak to my wife for a second. So he mutes his Zoom, and you can see him talking there a little bit. And he's kind of, you know, joking, and they're serious for a second. And then he's joking again, and he goes, "That's my wife, everybody." And she goes, "It's not just, you know, it's not just the moderator. There's 400 and some on of you." And then she just yells off camera. She says, "Hi, everybody." And then she walks out of the room. But I thought, wow. Oh, you know, I was like, and I told this story to Anne, and Anne's like, "What's your point?" And I was like, "Oh, I just thought it was a funny story. I'm sorry." You know, it's like we're all struggling under the pressure of trying to work at home and like having these different inputs and people that. So it's the thing about being in a place, like when you're at the office, you're all at the office and you all kind of know you have a camaraderie that is very similar. But the four of us are all here. And we're all doing things, but we're all doing very disparate, different things.
Right.
But we're all in the same geographical space. So it's just there's a tension to it.
It's so hilarious because I see the same stuff in my meetings and everything. I'll be presenting a report or something. And the dog will walk up and he like nudges his nose under my hand because he wants me to pet him. Or one time, you know, I'm sitting there talking about something. Next thing you know, a red lightsaber flies across my forehead, you know, because Mike's like swinging it. And all you hear in the background is, you know, like Darth Vader and, you know, and I'm just like, oh, my God.
You know? You're like, no, you're not my father.
Yeah, you know, and it's hilarious, you know, and every once in a while I'll have on like a virtual background and then you see one of the boys' heads pop in, you know, it's like, because I don't see him coming, you know?
Yeah.
Because if I didn't have the virtual background, I could see them coming.
Of course, yeah.
But I have the virtual background, next thing you know, boop, their face pops in and boop, it pops out. And then, like, they think it's funny, and it's like in and out.
How many years ago was that one guy that was giving his guest spot on a news show on CNN or something, and his kid runs into the room. Yeah, and then his wife comes.
That was like, I think that was like in March or April or something. Yeah, that was.
I think it was definitely like last year. Come on, but
no, but it was. It was during COVID though.
No, it's pre-COVID.
Was it pre-COVID?
I'm sure it was pre-COVID. Oh, I don't know. COVID happened, like people started doing that pretty regularly, and they were like, "This guy's completely off the hook," you know.
And the wife comes in and like funnels the kids out the door.
Yeah, stuff. Tries to get them out, yeah. Back them out.
All right. So let's get into it a little bit.
Okay.
The cabin with Bert.
Oh, okay. We'll start with that one.
Yeah, I wanted to start with that for a reason. You'll get into the reason
in
a second. But yeah, the cabin with Bert Kreischer. So Netflix original series coming out.
Yeah.
So what do you think?
I like it. I mean, I like the concept. I like the comedian. I don't know if you're familiar with The Machine. His stand-up routine?
No, I'm not.
Oh, God. Okay, I will send you some of the funniest 10-minute the funniest 10-minute set about him and the Russian mob. Like, he was on a train in some, you know, in Europe, and he ran into the Russian mob, and, what? You know, it takes turns that you wouldn't see coming. Oh. And then part of his shtick is that he does his show topless, like he likes to take his shirt off. But he's not a classically attractive. He looks like me, probably. You know, a little bit, probably.
I saw the tree. Well, he looks like more like a. Well, I would say body wise, like a Drew Carey or something.
Yeah, you know, yeah. Right. But you know, but dad he's not. Bod. He doesn't care.
He's got dad bod.
So yeah. So this is cool. Like I like the setup of the trailer. The trailer sets it up really well. I love the kids asking if he's in rehab. Right. I don't know if it's real or if it's staged, but it's so awesome that they would ask, you know. And then the thing that made me like it was just something to watch for a little bit. But then when it had Caitlyn Jenner in it, I was just like, oh man, like this comedian is like no this, you know, it's one of Bill Burr's best friends. And I'm saying Bill Burr is like would take Kate. It's just they're just no nonsense guys.
Right.
So it's like if they wouldn't say anything behind your back, they wouldn't say to your face. So when there's that tension with Caitlyn Jenner that is palpable but yet playful, I just thought that was just this evocative possible train wreck that I just want to see. And I'm not a big Kardashian fan. I'm not a big, you know, Caitlyn Jenner fan or now I even forgot what Jenner, what is, but yeah, so that was my hook. That just secured me for at least one episode.
Yeah, that'll come in episode 8 or something. So you're gonna be sitting.
But it all drops at the same time. They don't even do. They don't worry about it.
Oh, that's true. Right, that's true. Yeah, and I think you know, like you said, how you know, like Bill Burr, they're no nonsense guys and everything. And if you didn't know, like if you were to watch Bill Burr for the very first time, you're gonna be like, wow, this guy's a jerk or whatever. You know, the way he comes across, the way he talks about things. You know, he's vulgar and he, right. You know. Well, the way, like, it's his comedy style.
Yeah.
And then you learn that well, he's married to a black woman.
Right.
And it puts in perspective, like, where the guy's coming from and what his comedy is about. And it almost makes him funnier, you know, because it, like, relieves some of the jerkiness and it allows the comedic sense to shine through, I think.
And I think when you get through that comedic style, which is, I think it's totally a style. I think there is a genuineness and there's a deeper thought. There's more of a meditation on just the everydayness of what you're talking about. You know what I mean? So it's like, that's why his podcast, the Monday Morning Podcast, is like 3 hours of just him like being at his house and doing stuff. You know what I mean? It's like, it is the most esoteric kind of podcast where it doesn't even matter what he's doing, what he's saying. There's parts of it that are, you know, enthralling. So I think that, and then this, and then now they have a podcast together where they both are on the same podcast and they,
oh, do they really?
And they just kind of chat with each other. So
I bet that's hilarious though.
It's hilarious. So, you know, I think that has kind of sparked my interest in this.
Well, and this strikes me as like a non-reality reality show.
Okay.
Do you know, like, in a way, it's because reality shows are kind of like they go out, they recruit people, and then there's like some weird competition that makes it like, ooh, this is real. But then if it's real, this competition wouldn't exist. But yet it's almost like Bert invites a bunch of buddies over and he's like, hey, come on, check it out. I decided to start keeping bees, you know, and they just walk over to see what the bees are. Or he has like, you know, he just comes up with like, it's kind of like a bored guy with money.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, let's see how well we could throw axes.
Right.
Or whatever it is, you know, and it's just he and his buddies like drinking and doing dumb stuff.
And then
it's almost like college party frat boy nonsense, but they're like middle-aged guys.
Right. So, you know, we as the Willets are big, big fans of Somebody Feed Phil.
Right.
And that's basically Phil Rosenthal, the producer of Everybody Loves Raymond, traveling around the world and eating in different cities and then doing a documentary series on each city. So then on top of that, there was this recently, there was a, oh, I forgot his name from, hold on. High School Musical. I should know it.
High School Musical.
Zac Efron.
Oh, Zac Efron, yeah.
So more recently, there was a Zac Efron series where he traveled around the world and talked about environmental concerns and had these great experiences around the world. It's almost like Bert, like, saw these things and, you know, Netflix and him and his manager and his agents are getting together like, Bert, you should travel the world and, you know, have, you know, famous people or do things around the world. He's like, screw that. I'll go to a cabin in the woods and it'll be great. I don't have to travel the world. People will come to me.
Right. You know? That's too funny. Yeah, I mean, I'll definitely give it a episode or two. It might be good trainer fodder or something,
yeah,
where you can like turn off your brain a little bit and just, yeah, not have to follow some deep story, you know, with silent rape scenes, you know, and yeah, it's just goofy. It's just goofy, like
good times.
Yeah. Good times that the guy's having with his buddies, barbecuing in the woods, drinking some beers, throwing axes. You know, what?
I mean, paintballing.
Yeah, paintballing. Shooting, trying to shoot apples off of your head with a arrow, whatever that is.
That was crazy. That was crazy. Yeah.
So, yeah, I'll definitely give it an episode or two. And if it's fun and it's, like I said, and if it's like trainer fodder or something, then yeah, I'll watch a few more for sure.
Good deal.
All right. The Trial of the Chicago 7. Comes out on Netflix and select theaters.
Mm.
So what do you think? Select theaters because that's their way of saying we wanted to come out nationally, but we're only going to come out where they let us?
No, I think it's more about like it's still Academy. And it's also this cast that they put together. This cast is like a, you know, movie. They're big time celebrities. And they're movie stars. So I think they also need a movie that is not just a streaming service. You know, they want people to know that
like it was put together and spent. Something.
Yeah, exactly. They know that money was spent on this product, you know, not just streaming money, which Netflix proved is not as, you know, is the same, if not more than film money. But anyway, so yeah, it feels like a movie. It is extremely topical. Feels like it's just ripe for the time of the social upheaval that we're experiencing. And this is a social upheaval that feels like a snapshot in the past, but so relevant to the present, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with that. I think the main difference, though, is one was like anti-war protesting, and today it's more social unrest and systemic problems with racism and those sorts of things. The cause might be a little bit different, but I think the underlying segments of society and the people who felt that they were, and you know, when you think about like Vietnam and everything, I mean, who's going to war and who's getting drafted, right? Non-college kids.
Right.
I mean, maybe it wasn't necessarily black, but it was more working class or blue collar kids, right? Even if they were white.
Right.
So you're looking at maybe a more of a, with maybe their cause, it's more classism than it was racism with regard to the anti-war side of it. But then, yeah, I mean, and you know, these were the yippies. You're familiar with the yippies.
Yep. Yippies. The yippies?
Yippies.
No, the hippies. The hippies?
No, hippies were hippies and yippies were yippies.
What's a yippie? I don't know a yippie.
No, the Yippie was the Youth International Party. It was like a political party that they were trying to create or whatever.
You crazy Chicagoans come up with the craziest stuff.
Yeah, but what's Abby Hoffman? You know, he was like the main dude.
Okay.
And the one thing I want to see, though, I'm not sure how much you know of it.
I don't. That's why I said Chicago in the title and I was like, Jimmy will inform me.
So two of the defendants, Hoffman and Rubin, they show up in court. You know, there were eight, but I think one of the guys or something wound up getting like his court was either prior to it or he got indicted earlier. I'm not really sure what happened, but it wound up being seven. And so two of the guys show up to court and they're wearing judges' robes.
Oh, wow.
So the judge, of course, orders them to take off the robe because they can't wear the robe in the court. So they must have known because they take off the robe and they're wearing Chicago police uniforms. Yeah, it was. So I hope that scene is in this movie.
It's gotta be in there, man.
It's gotta be. I mean, it's like famous, you know. And the other thing I'm excited about this too is it's like it looks like a great dialogue movie.
Oh, it's Aaron Sorkin. Come on.
Yeah. And it's not going to be one of those explosion movies. Explosion movies are explosion movies, right?
Every movie has its place.
Yeah, exactly. But I think like we go down these rabbit holes and societally and culturally, it's like one explosion movie after another.
Yeah.
And it's like our attention span can't handle dialogue.
No, you need a respite. You need a pace change. And this is a courtroom drama. You know, like A Few Good Men, like some of the best movies are courtroom dramas and courtroom dramas have this inherent
Michael Keaton
tension.
On the stand. It's amazing.
And Sacha Baron Cohen, like seeing Sacha Baron Cohen in this role and the little bits that I saw him in, like I'm excited to see him kind of stretched to this space, to this place.
As not Borat?
Not Borat. Not
like
a real
acting role?
Like a real acting role and like real chops. And I think the fact that you could pull off a Borat or, you know, do one of these characters, Ali G, you know? Like,
right, right.
If you could do those characters and stay in character, then, you know you have the chops, but you don't really take it seriously. So this is, I like this. It feels like he's taking it seriously. He's getting to work with Aaron Sorkin, you know, and it's like, that's kind of a great thing. And for us, you know, Trailer Junkies, whenever I say Aaron Sorkin, I'm thrown back to Molly's Game, which is like our first episode or something.
Oh, yeah,
I think,
yeah, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that was like one of our first episodes, maybe if not our very first.
I think it was our very first episode. Either that or 12 Strong. I think those are the first.
No, that
two
might have
episodes.
Been that might have been second. Whatever it is, don't go listen. We were horrible then. Not saying we're any better now, but
at least we sound better now.
That's right.
Hopefully.
Yeah, you know, and the reason why I wanted to do this one second is because it gets a little bit into what we've been watching. Well, before we get into that, let me back up and say, yeah, this is a must watch. Like, there's no way, no how I won't watch it. Of course I will. Yeah, I mean, it's all around. It looks like an awesome movie. I'd love to, again, watch this one with my Uncle Bud. Because, you know, he was a city worker at the time, and he worked streets of sanitation. And essentially a garbage man, you know, and a plow driver and so on, working the plows and such. And he talked about during the 68 convention and the riots and all the stuff that was going on in Chicago. I mean, this exact movie, really, about how they got the city workers and the trash trucks and everything to like barricade streets to make sure they could get through. And so he was like almost as a city employee, a city worker in streets of sanitation. He's like on the front lines trying to like block marchers and all this stuff, you know, and ordered by Mayor Daley and everything. I mean, so watching this with him, I think would be awesome, you know, because he was like right there living it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I would assume you're going to watch this too.
I mean, so we have two trailers this week, both Netflix. There were other things that I saw that I kind of wanted to cover, but this had this very nice juxtaposition of aesthetically highbrow, lowbrow, you know, kind of thing. But as we described, you know, there are definitely value to both of these products. They're both on Netflix, so there's no barrier to entry, no friction keeping us from watching this.
And I think you said it best, though, man. Sometimes you need respite.
Yeah.
And you were talking about respite to explosion movies.
Right.
But I think, you know, I mean, there's hurricanes and fires and pandemics and crazy election season. And I mean,
and
like
school.
Oh, and the whole school. Yeah, yeah. Everything is just insanity right now. Like the market's like at record highs, plummets.
Right.
Never thought you would beat the past record. It's high again, higher than it was.
Right.
Boom, plummets again. I mean, like sometimes you just need like stupid. Like cleverly stupid,
right?
Stupid,
right.
You know, just to sit right there, turn off. I need to turn off from all this like negativity of whatever climate change and people yelling at the TV and you know, I mean, you got to go to these things sometimes, you know, just to take a break, you know. And but the thing about it though that I wanted to say with regard to like the Chicago 7.
Right.
And looking at, you know, where we are with what we've been watching. And you said you only watched half of it or whatever. And, you know, and I watched the whole thing. And like I said, I think the second half might have been a little better than the first half of The Social Dilemma.
Okay.
And that just came out on Netflix like a week ago. So I watched it and, you know, it's pretty much like how social media is causing all the civil unrest. And I think what's fascinating is civil unrest, whether it's something like the Arab Spring or it's George Floyd protests, or we just had the most recent one with the acquittal, or well, maybe not acquittal, but it was like
the non-prosecution of Breonna Taylor's killers. Yes.
Yeah. I don't even know what you would call that. Like one of them was like not indicted. What's the
One of them was charged with firing his weapon into a neighbor's apartment or something.
Yeah, it was something non like murder related or something.
He was the one that didn't shoot Breonna Taylor.
Right. But he gets like indicted or something.
Yeah.
Or not indicted, but
he gets charged.
Yeah, he gets charged, I guess.
Yeah,
the other guys get off.
Right.
You know, whatever. We don't need to go down that thing, but what I'm saying though is and then like protests start, and whether they're peaceful or they're not peaceful, but most of these were peaceful, fortunately. But in the 60s, though, they did all of that stuff, whether it was in Chicago or it was in San Francisco or wherever it might have, Berkeley and so on.
Or D.C., come on.
D.C., yeah, D.C., perfect one. The bus boycott in
Alabama, yeah.
Alabama, yeah, like all that stuff, you know, was all done without social media.
Yeah, the organization is amazing.
So when you think about how could people organize and protest, get their point across, you know, march, whether it's in Washington or it's in Mississippi or wherever, what they were doing in the 60s, they did all of that without any of the social media. You strip social media from people today, they're going to start walking in the walls. They won't know what to do. They will be so lost. And the reason I bring that up is I think there's something to the cultural fabric and organization and networking and the human connection when you do it like playing the ground game. Right.
Right. Right.
Where like modern day social media and Twitter and everything, it's like too easy.
Yeah.
You know, like one tweet and it's like, It's like the nuclear option almost. It just every hits time. Everything.
Every time. Every time is the nuclear option, right? It's like,
yeah, it hits everywhere at once for everything. You know what I mean?
Right. And you have this feedback loop from social media that you see. You put a post up, you put an Instagram picture up, you put, you know, anything up on social media, and you get feedback. You get likes, you get, you know, retweets, you get all that stuff. And when you get that, you get very sensitive to, oh, this kind of post was successful. You know, it got hundreds of retweets or something like that, you know, and then this post wasn't. So even without any kind of analytics, you have this visceral, this gut level analytics that's like, oh, when I post something like this, I get, you know, like when I post puppies, I get tons of likes. And then when I post just me, then I don't, you know? So
right.
I'm going to post tons of puppy pictures, you know?
With my face on them.
So it's a cycle, and it's this trap, and yeah, and there's definitely a stickiness to it that has its place and it has benefits. But I think, you know, what those experts, what those engineers and what those people in the docs were saying was that, you know, you take the good, you take the bad, you know, and it's like so much bad. Like it just for the amount of good that it's done equally as much bad.
Well, and as they were saying, no one believes that anybody who creates a social platform, you know, whether Instagram or Facebook, Twitter, any of them, WhatsApp, no one goes into it saying, I want to like influence elections and create social upheaval around the world and stuff. I mean, I think they truly went into it believing that they were going to do, you know, they were going to connect good. People. They were going to make families stay in touch across the country or whatever, you know, like,
yeah.
You know, I really feel that in their mind, they were altruistic. It's just when you play AI, when you play against AI in a video game or you play online against a real human, people do things that are extremely unpredictable that you can't ever think through. People come up with very unique ways to solve problems. And sometimes their problems are like influencing elections, you know, or whatever.
Yeah. Well, here's a small sample, a small small story of what you're talking about. Like, I like playing Monopoly, like so much so that like my son and Bryce and I love to play Monopoly, but you gotta drag the board out. The game takes 2 hours, you know?
Right.
And it's such a laborious undertaking. I got Monopoly on the phone. Right. So you could play Monopoly against the machine or against a computer all day long, you know?
Yeah.
But when you play against a computer, I beat the computer. Like if, you know, if the dice fall like 75% of the time, I can beat the computer. Right. So it's like not so challenging. But you get people involved. And like, depending on the three other people that are in the room with you, like those people, even if they're not good at it, just the you know, sometimes you'll play with somebody so stubborn that they don't want to trade anything, you know, and nobody's got, you know, monopolies on anything. And then they're like, I was like, all right, well, you're just the first one I'm going to have to take out because you aren't trading with anybody, you know? So it's
right.
It's there's a stubbornness and there's a savvy to the human equation that isn't, you know, and of course the AI is kind of very simplistic in this game. Because it's not really full AI, but yeah. So when you have the human element, it definitely adds a flavor to it. So the thing, oh, did they talk about Google's first principle or whatever?
First do no harm or something?
First do no harm. Yeah. Did they talk about that?
Yeah. They did bring that up.
I love that they said there's no one villain in this story.
Right.
That's well, like the Facebook lawyers told me to say that there's no one villain in this story.
Yeah. No, and I think you bring up a good point when you're saying that when you're playing against the computer versus a human. Sometimes if you have two people who equally know and understand the game or whatever it is you're doing, but say a game, because they understand it at such a high level and they can work the game in ways that are so complex, sometimes that makes them predictable because you're also complex and you're expecting complex.
Mm-hmm.
When you get somebody who is playing Monopoly, for example, or chess or something, and they're not complex and they don't even know what the heck they're doing, and they're just throwing dice and moving things and picking cards. And it's like, and you think to yourself, like, maybe they're easy to beat, but at the same time, you're like, why are they?
You don't know where they're going to go next.
Yeah, they're so unpredictable because you're like, why are they doing this move? That's the worst move they could do.
You know what the worst is? The worst is fantasy football.
Oh, right.
If you get people in fantasy football, like I have like the people that I play fantasy football with for the past 7 years, and it's great because we're just a bunch of guys all over America, our friends that moved back that we went to Maine with. He's the commish.
Oh, okay.
You know, so I was like, we've played for a really long time with him. But all these guys, we are kind of serious about it. Like, so we're all serious. We're all up on it. It's great. So you win, you lose. It's predictable. It's great. Everybody has a good time. But then the work league comes in and there's like all these people that during draft time, they're losing their mind on the draft. They're drafting crazy and they're putting people in and they're doing trades that they shouldn't be doing. And I'm like, what's going on here? If I had known that this is going to happen, like it's completely unpredictable. Oh, and in Monopoly, right before, like I'll be ready to take somebody out. And it'll be, you know, coming up on my hotel row. And I'm like, all right, it's coming. You know, you just land anywhere in my hotels and you're out. And they'll like commit suicide. They'll give all their stuff to somebody for a dollar. And then they'll just like, they knew that they're going to die on the next move. But just to screw me because I was been taking them out slowly over time.
For sure.
They'll just like, all right, I'm selling all my property to this other dude.
That's called and spite.
And hoping that he takes you out.
Right. That's so funny, man. But yeah, you know, and that's, I think, one of the big issues when you look at these platforms and so on is, you know, they start with altruistic means. Uh-huh. I truly believe that. But people are unpredictable. Political states have agendas. You encounter people who are extremely savvy with how to disseminate information. To counter that information, you're already playing defense, which means you already suck at what you're doing, you know, and it's just, yeah, it's, you know, if you could control the information space, it doesn't, I mean, flat earthers and such, right? I mean,
oh God.
You know,
or the bird people. Have you heard about the bird people?
Oh yeah.
Birds aren't real. Them. Yeah.
Right. You know, and, but you know, here's one of the main issues though. You hear flat earther or anti-vaxxers, whatever right. It might be, but you hear flat earthers and you're thinking to yourself, man, how could anyone believe that? But then you hear because they start feeding it to you because you clicked on something,
right.
Even if it was by accident. Now you're down the rabbit hole on YouTube or something, right? Twitter.
Right.
For some reason, they know you're into it, and every platform is feeding you this stuff. And over and over and over, you're seeing flat earth or propaganda. You start believing, like, well, maybe it is a flat earth. But, I mean, that might be a bit of an extreme, but think about it politically, though.
Yes, I agree with you wholeheartedly.
You hear these misinformation stories, and then every story get slightly twisted from the other story.
Yeah.
And it goes from Kaepernick taking a knee because of like police violence and everything against blacks.
Police brutality. Yeah.
And after that story gets told 1,000 times across all these platforms from all these people, all of a sudden he's anti-military and wants it to be a Marxist state or something. And everybody's like, ah, F Kaepernick, you know, he's a communist or, you know, whatever it is. Right. And that's how this stuff just goes insane.
Yeah. Yeah. It definitely spirals out of control. And it, you know, the thing that really made me turn it off, the thing that made me despair a little bit was within the first 20 minutes of this documentary, they ask these guys who were like, you know, head of engineering at Facebook and Google and stuff like that.
Top designers.
And they ask them what the problem is. And very few of them can encapsulate the problem, which
the
is
the guy
part
who invented the like button.
Yeah, right. And then they ask him, how do you fix it? And nobody has an answer at all.
Right.
You know what I mean? And then they intersperse these weird dramatic scenes with big name actors, like big name young actors. I was like, it's very strange. Did you think those segments were strange?
Well, you have the documentary side of it.
Right.
And then you have like the live action fictional side of it that's playing out what they're talking about.
Right.
That was a little bit odd because...
Did you need it?
No.
Is it? It's not necessary.
No, I agree with you on that. And I think someone like me, someone like you, we get what's going on and stuff.
It's a documentary. Just make a documentary.
My mom watched, let's say, Mom, you got to watch this because like you're playing Candy Crush way too much.
Right, right, right.
And she gets on there and I don't know if, I mean, I don't know if you saw that part. I don't know where you bowed out, but they had like the three guys and they had the virtual guy that they were trying to like reel back in because.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Okay, you might not have got there yet, but it was essentially these guys were playing the role of the algorithm.
Okay.
But if you don't know like what a computer's doing and how a computer's functioning, even on a very basic level, you're wondering why these people are pushing buttons and you think to yourself, are there really people manipulating me? And it's like, well, no, the software they wrote is manipulating you, but it's people who wrote the software.
Right.
But if you don't understand that, I think you're going to be like, wow, there's people actually literally watching every move I'm making, you know, and it's yeah, that was a little bit odd. I think that was a little bit odd.
I think it's interesting that when you put it like that, because the algorithm, it manipulates us for sure. But it can't move us 180 degrees from where we are, right? It could probably move us 30 to 60 degrees off, which is extremely far off. But it's got to start where we are and take us along a path. You know what I mean? It knows how to get us from A to Z, but it knows that, oh, this person's starting at F. Okay, I start them at F and I take them through the progression. But I don't think it's so far off that it only exposes what we are. And to me, that was the despair that I kind of felt when they said, how do you fix this problem? And I was like, my answer was, you can't fix the problem. Humanity is the problem. You know what I mean?
Well, I don't think humanity is the problem. I think our lizard brain.
Right. Okay.
That has evolved to be social and make social connections. And over like millennia, we've evolved to have these social connections of like tens of people, right?
Right.
I mean, if you think about like a village,
yeah,
hunter-gatherer village, I mean, what's in there? I don't know, 500 people?
Right. A large one. Yeah.
A large one. And that's like a massive social circle, you know? But the reality is the people you're closest with in life, it's like tens of people.
Yeah.
You're not close with... You know, oh, I got like 5,000 friends on Facebook or something. But now you wind up in this world where it's not about the intimate connection. Mm-hmm. It's about you have 10,000 followers and this person who likes has 30,000 followers. So you're thinking, wow, they're more influential than I am.
Right.
How do I get in their better graces to then build up on their ladder? And it's like, it's not even anything about, you know, like intimacy, let's right. say, or connection. And you're using these platforms to just feed this inner beast that we're not even, that we've evolved to want to have, but we don't have the cognitive ability to control it because it's so deep in our lizard brain to make a connection. That we can't escape it in a cognitive, intelligent way because it's too, like, visceral.
Right.
So, I mean, and, you know, and it's like, it's simple things. You know, Jim tagged Ted in a photo. Ted gets emails saying, I tagged you in a photo. If they just said, if they just showed the picture in the email, the interaction's over. Oh, cool. I like that picture.
Right.
Whatever, you're at Disneyland. That was a fun day. But they don't do that. They and they leave it ambiguous. And you're sitting there like, oh, I'm too busy. Next thing you know, man, it's like your jaw starts moving like you have some addiction.
You're grinding
going
your
on.
Teeth.
Yeah, you're grinding your teeth. You know, you need that dopamine hit. And you're just like, what picture could it be? So you click through.
Right.
And when you click through, it's like, oh, that picture, I got it. And then what happens is, let's say you're not really on Facebook much.
Right.
And let's say somebody from your high school is not really on Facebook much. Maybe once every, who knows how long, right? Every like 6 months you're on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the people who are on Facebook a ton, they're not going to offer you up as a recommendation. What they're going to do is put two people who are almost never on and recommend those to each other. Because once you guys connect, the chances are higher that you're going to re-engage again and stay on Facebook longer.
Mm.
Right? So it's like, it is manipulative in many ways to get...
Right.
All they want to do is keep you there and not make you go away so they can continue to sell to advertisement. It's criminal in some regard. Well, it's like we always talk about. You go down the YouTube rabbit hole.
Of course.
And it always ends in Russian dash cam videos.
Because they're so enthralling. Come on, man. Life and death and snow. There's so much snow in those dash cam videos.
No. Horses flying through the air. Anyway, so that's pretty much that. And I think that's all we watched. Okay. I don't remember. Well, we have a couple episodes left of The Handmaid's Tale, but that was last week's news. But yeah, we'll finish it here probably like... I hate to watch any episodes with my in-laws because I'm not sure what Barbara would do, you know, watching silent rape scenes.
At least they're silent.
Yeah, I
maybe
guess
she'll
so.
Fall asleep before they...
Right, but it's the dystopic future that I don't want to see happen due to social media.
Yeah, so we've done some watching since we've been home this week.
Can I interrupt really quick?
Go for it.
So since we talked last week and we covered The Mandalorian in episode 130,
yeah,
we are replaying the first season of The Mandalorian.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so I think we're, episode 4, I want to say. And I will say that the second run through, the second viewing of it,
uh-huh,
is way better than the first viewing.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. I mean, I'm picking up on a lot of things I don't know how I missed. Like just the fact that they're on a post-apocalyptic Coruscant. You know, that was one of I'm like, oh, that's what that is. And how the Empire's like, well, I knew the Empire was over, but it's just. You just pick up on different things.
Right, so, yeah, it's nuanced.
It's nuanced in many ways, yeah. So watching that and the boys, I'll have to say too, I thought it was going to be too dark.
Uh-huh.
The animated Clone Wars, I think we're in up like season 4 now. That's way darker than...
I know.
That is like super sinister.
It has an edge. And I think because it's animation to entice or to prove itself, it's like the little guy. It has to punch above its weight, you know? I mean, it has to be more, has to show more,
yeah,
than Mandalorian does, because Mandalorian's live action. So Mandalorian can kind of be, you know, can speak softly and carry a big stick, you know? But I think cartoons have to like carry a big stick and hit you over the head with it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, The Mandalorian though, second run through, anybody who's seen it once, I'd recommend watching it again before season 2 comes out. Anyway, didn't mean to interrupt you.
No worries. That's a good tip. Pro tip.
Yeah, and I wasn't a huge fan the first time I watched it. I am enthralled with it now and I think it's fantastic.
It's a more respectful viewing. It's like your appreciation for it has grown.
Yeah, and I also, like, now I'm looking to see, well, which of the directors directed this one, because we watched...
Ah, now that you saw that behind-the-scenes stuff with all the... Yeah.
Exactly. So I'm a little bit more sensitized to, like, who's doing what and how it came about and the way they filmed it and this and the... the AI and not the AI. What would you call it? Like the
the
video,
the volume, the soundstage, right?
Yeah, the volume, the soundstage, the volume and stuff, and how that played into it and everything. So no, I think it's totally like
What is it? 80 to 90% of the reflection in the Mandalorian's gear and his helmet is from the void. So they replace it with CG, right? CGI, the actual plates, the actual backgrounds. But
wait, the void.
But the void, I'm sorry, not the void, the volume.
You're doing it too.
I see, right? I took that mistake somebody else made and now I'm doing it. So the volume, the game engine projection is the reflection. So they just preserve that reflection and they don't have to do that in post. So yeah, I think that's
it's incredible.
You know, an achievement of cinematography and practical cinematography that's just amazing.
Incredible. All right. So you've been watching what now?
So the family and I have watched, we watched all of Harry Potter since we got back. Bryce wanted to see it, so we've been chopping it up and watching it little by little.
It's like, what is it, 9 movies, I think, or 11?
I think there's 7 movies. 6 books, 7 movies.
I thought it was more, because I thought they broke some of them into 2 different movies.
I think that was just the last one, Deathly Hallows. They did Deathly Hallows 1 and 2.
Oh, okay, okay.
But anyway, I'm not a huge Harry Potter fan, but I've seen the movies like 5 times. So I finally have figured out that I'm a huge fan of Dobby, the house elf.
Oh, I love him.
And when Dobby dies, it is the worst part of the whole thing.
I agree with you 100%.
But it's so beautifully shot. It's the sand and the water and the pietà scene. And I tell the kids every time somebody dies in somebody's lap, I say, look, a pietà scene. And finally, the kids are catching on. Because when I was in film school, like I've made a couple movies. And I always try to put a pietà scene in, but it only made sense in one of my movies, so I have one.
And wait, what is it?
It's did you know the sculpture, the pietà?
I don't think so.
So it's a very famous sculpture.
Okay.
One of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles did it, and it's
that's
where,
what made it famous.
And it's where Jesus is laying across. Mary's lap, and he's dying or dead in her lap.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And it's one of the most famous sculptures in the world.
Oh, so anytime you see somebody dying in someone's lap,
that's the pietà scene. It is a connection. It is the most intimate connection you can show. That's not, well, I mean, it's probably even more intimate than sex. You know, it's like it is somebody dying in your arms.
Well, you see it like in war movies.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Saving Private Ryan, I think, has like 3 of them.
And they always say something so profound. Tell my wife I love her.
Just tell me I didn't die in vain.
That's right.
So, yeah. So that to me, so Dobby, man, just like he does so much and he's in such few scenes and it's like, he wins the day of all the movies. So that's what we watch as a family. And then on my own, I'm trying to watch The Boys. And The Boys is very, very good. But I just can't, I don't know, I can't bring myself to watch it. I just, there's something, it's like, I don't know. I'm gonna muscle through. It's got great writing. It's got great stories. It has this beautiful female protagonist and antagonist sphere that it's chasing right now. So I don't know. The jury is still out, but I will try to finish the season and we'll report back.
Yeah, I've done that with shows where like, you know, you like it, you know, you want to watch it, but there's something about it. You're like, I just don't have the emotional fortitude to carry through right now because like you have to be in a mindset,
right,
that says I'm prepared for what's to come, because there's just some shows that like I'm not emotionally ready for what might be witnessed.
Right. Well, so. And they bring back Elizabeth Shue in this season. And when they bring her back, I'm like, all right, just dream sequence. You know what I mean? Because he killed her in the first season, end of her season. So I'm like, dream sequence. But the reveal after that, it's not a dream sequence. but I won't give any more away. But it is the best reveal. In case I ever watch it. But it's the best reveal in all of the whole series. So
okay, cool.
So that is the thing that is going to keep me watching, things like that.
Have you seen The Umbrella Academy?
Audrey is a big fan.
I hear it's amazing.
Anne and I tried to watch it. We couldn't get into it. Not her cup of tea. I mean, it really hits me in the same vein as The Boys. It has that same feel of the crew. It's like, it's right. You know, everybody's trying to capitalize on the ensemble superhero space of the Avengers. And I just think, you know, I think we're kind of all tapped out.
That's a good way to put it.
We're kind of tapped out on it, you know?
Yeah, no, I agree. And Clarissa wanted me to get into The Umbrella Academy. She started watching it. I think she's like two episodes in. I said, you know, we're doing other things. How about when we're done with these other ones, we could start that one.
One at a time. One at a time. Let's finish up Handmaid's Tale and then we'll talk.
Yeah, from one dystopic future to another. So, but yeah, cool. That sounds like you guys had a lot of good fun watching since you've been home with Harry Potter and stuff. I mean, I watched all the movies once of the, I think, what is it, 7 books?
Yeah.
I think I read 4 of the books.
Okay.
Clarissa read all the books probably like a half dozen times. Yeah, I read 4 of the books. I watched all the movies once. Some of the movies were watching me. And that might have been either A, we started them too late, or I don't even know what it was. But yeah, I remember like struggling on some of them. I would say my biggest complaint with the Harry Potters is when they get into too much of the modern day, I don't know, muggle stuff. I love the castle. I love the wizardry. I love Diagon Alley.
Right.
You know, and all this stuff that goes like that whenever they get into like the more medieval side of the wizardry and stuff, I really enjoy the fantasy side of it.
Right.
What I don't enjoy is like the flying cars and you know, I mean like just all that kind of stuff. It just doesn't do it for me.
You see like the time, the period piece of it, but not the fantasy, the full fantasy, like the whim, you know, like the whimsical fantasy.
Yeah, right. The, as if today there are wizards doing what they're doing and I'm just like a tool in their world.
Right. You're a muggle.
I'm a muggle in their world. Yeah. So, all right, man. So episode 131 and how is the beer? How'd that finish out?
The beer finished off nice. Like, you know, like
you did the whole thing,
like every IP. I did the whole 19.2 ounces.
Perfect.
And like the bottle, like the can suggests, the beverage,
drink it all.
The beverage contained herein is seriously bomb IPA pouring clean and gold. No sip, citrus, tropical. No, the last sentence, we think you'll be pretty glad you had those extra 3.2 ounces.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
How'd your fit? You know, no oysters, no seafood to go with it. But.
Exactly. Unfortunately, no oysters. But no, I think the thing I like about it, though, is, and you've said this before with the yellow fizz lagers.
Yeah.
When they get warm, they're kind of like, bleh, you know?
Yeah.
This is a lager yeast brewed like an ale.
Mm-hmm.
As it gets warm, it takes on more ale-like characteristics.
Love it.
So rather than it turning into that like, ugh, God, I don't even want it anymore because it's getting warm, it actually like improves a little bit.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was good. It was good. I like it. So
awesome.
All right, man. And we will talk, well, a week from tomorrow and episode 132, but 131 is in the can.
There you go.
Catch you later, man.
Have a good one.
Next week, join Jim and Ted as they disarm another Hollywood bomb or marketing masterpiece. Remember, the Holy Trinity of podcasting. Subscribe, like, share.
Special thanks to Jeremy Kent Jackson for the voiceover and Rahelio for the music.